What's up, guys? Welcome to Target Table. And on the couch today, we have Emma, who's our brand director here at Rival. And next to her, we have our amazing Dennis, usually in sweatpants, but you've upgraded to jeans today, mate, which is great.
Thank you.
Leveling up, really cool. But yeah, Dennis is our senior copywriter. So guys, today I really wanted to just dive in and talk about the psychology of copywriting in branding and how potent it can be if you get it right. And how oftentimes, you know, we've seen this with our clients. It's something that is often seen as it's a nice to have, copywriting, but we make it a must because we believe that good copy could translate into visual identity and the visual should really land the copy and support it in many ways. But yeah, to dive in, I mean, we already had a brief conversation about this beforehand, but I think one of the things that we might want to touch on today is like the power of copywriting, how it can impact your ROI, maybe the history of it and how it's changed and what's happening with it at the moment. But yeah, what do you guys want to dive in?
Yeah, I like to consider copy as the personality of your brand. It's the voice. Mm. It's how you talk and express yourself. And I think that it gets slept on a little bit because everyone focuses on the visuals. Mm. It's kind of like meeting a really handsome, attractive person and then they start talking to you and you're like,
there's no substance here.
They're a little bit boring.
We've all been on that date before. We're like, wow. And then we're like, whoa.
No one wants a dud date.
So for that analogy, you're basically saying that like someone that has a beautiful look, physique, whatever, and then you find out that there's not much behind that.
Yeah.
Kind of, it's like lackluster almost.
Yeah, they haven't practiced their humor. Maybe they're a little bit generic. Maybe they don't really know how to express themselves very well. So your copy is like the voice of your brand. Mm. It's how you get your personality across. It's like when you're talking to your audience. And it's really, both sides are important. You don't really want a lot of personality and then to be kind of a bit unattractive either.
Yeah. You don't want the other way around where you're like really incredible and then people look at you and they're like, whoa.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's almost like when you're at a party and you're hanging out with people and then you meet that new person and then 60 seconds into the conversation, you're like, get me out of here.
Yep.
And then the whole time you're at the party, you're just avoiding that person. It's like a brand with bad copy. You're like, just leave me alone. I don't want to hear it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. That's how we consider it. So it's just really important.
Yeah. So start with that and then build an outfit that fits maybe how you feel. Mm-hmm. So like someone that's maybe comedic, usually they have maybe a more of an eccentric outfit potentially. So the relationship between someone's outfit and their personality, you know, is something that even, you know, fashion designers talk about when they're putting together someone's outfit is like, how do we express you through an outfit? So
yeah,
visual identity is similar.
It should match as well because you don't want a really fun, playful voice and then a really serious exterior. Like that's a little bit jarring as well. So it's all part of the strategy and how you build out the brand that it needs to be cohesive. It needs to be a complete experience. So
bring that into alignment.
Yeah.
And then for you, like Emma, like when you, I guess, looking at a brand here together with Dennis, like what are the first few things that you guys look at? Because again, I know when I look at good copy or bad copy, but you guys are the ones here at the team that are really just trying to elicit and figure out what's a starting point to try to figure out a brand's copywriting style. And yeah, if we just start there, like how do you kind of unearth what that might be for someone in their business?
Do you want me to take this?
I'll take this one if you like. Cool. We really start with it's the base values. It's the DNA of the brand. So what do they believe in? What do they want to express to the world? But then also how do they want the audience to feel? Mm. And then we create the voice that supports those two things, that balances both what you have to say and want to say with your brand, because that's really important, but also the feeling you want to convey to the audience. What's the voice that's going to get that across and make them feel that way?
And what's really important to that particular person? Like Dennis and I, we had this conversation beforehand where we were talking about like, you know, gamers, like dudes that play Xbox and, you know, guys and gals that play video games that really care about the features and benefits. Like what can I do when I'm using this machine? Mm. But someone that's maybe buying a car or buying fashion, it's a lot more emotional. It's a lot more about some kind of definitive meaning to it rather than what thread is this t-shirt made out of, for example.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's emotional. We really prefer copy and brand voices that hook into that emotional element. When you're going through the customer journey, your first impression, your first connection to the brand should be hooking into that emotional side and mm-hmm. resonating with that. And then you dive in further, you want to know price, you want to know features, you want to know benefits, you want to know the technical side. And so layering your voice and your copy so it has that flexibility to cover those aspects mm. as the customer engages with you is really important. But you have to lead with the emotion first. Mm. Otherwise, they're going to walk straight past you and not even dive in further.
Yeah, and we talk about like Nike is a great example of that where, you know, they could talk about the features and benefits of their items and how durable they are and how great quality the materials are and XYZ, but they always lead with power, mm-hmm. excellence, the pursuit of greatness, you know, action. And there's always like an action shot of someone like, you know, Serena Williams hitting a ball and she's in the middle of the shot and then it says, hit the ball as loud as you can. So it's this kind of, it's kind of evocative and they always lead the conversation that way. They don't lead it from features and benefits. And I see a lot of brands, and we've talked about this a lot, where they're leading with features and benefits. It's kind of a bad place to start almost because it's not quite, I mean, humans are emotional creatures. It's not quite.
You're not ready for it. It's like when you go on a date and someone hits you with their list of all the things they want in a spouse and you're like, I've known you for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It's what it's like.
Too much pressure.
Too much information, oversharing.
Yeah, and it's, what is it called? The brochure effect. It's when you give someone way too much information and then they're like, well, what do I do with this? Mm. But Nike's case, like, what do you think is, like, how do you think the emotion supports someone to go through to the purchase? Because obviously, you know, Nike being a giant company like it is, it's, they got to hit profits, they got to hit targets. So there's, the cool thing is you can kind of learn from the greats here. They're focusing on emotion. What do they get out of it? Like, what's the outcome of that?
Mm. So the copy with Nike, what I love about what they bring into it is always has this action element.
Yep.
It's always got this just do it. Like it hits that call to action of take charge, mm-hmm. confidence, make a move. Yeah. And always their copy is leaning into doing something, having a result. And it pushes you because you're always on the cusp of I want to be a certain way. I want to be more confident. I want to be more athletic. I want to take charge of stuff going on in my life.
Like I'm sick of being overweight. Now's the time.
Yeah. And their copy always hits that moment where you're like, yeah, I can be that person. I'm going to do it. And so the copy is very emotionally geared into take action, take charge, do it. It's very, very active.
Very visual. Every time it's like take action. You don't think like you're going to sit down and take action.
No. Yeah. Like I'm going to put my shoes on and go for a run.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm. And even if that, like, I mean, I've noticed a lot of people that aren't like athletic in any way, shape or form, don't play sports and they rep Nike and they love it. And it's almost like that's a part of their personality. And then there's an alignment. You see the ads, you're like, oh, I feel kind of like that person, you know? So even though I'm not hitting the court or the field, I want that feeling. So I'll buy the product to get that feeling.
My favorite thing about Nike is how they define an athlete. And they define an athlete as anybody.
Mm.
Literally anybody. Anybody can be an athlete. If you have a body and you move, you are an athlete. And that ability to go, I can do it too. This relates to me. I can be great. Translates through all the levels of their audience, not just high elite performing athletes, but the everyday person that gets up at 5 and goes for a run, even when they've had 4 donuts, not me, not talking
or a night
about
out of the
me.
Town, a couple too many beers.
Yeah,
I do love donuts, but
yeah, it just gets you moving. It taps into that universal element in human nature where you're like, yes, I want this.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess, you know, here Rival famously, we always start the workshop in that place. Like, what's the whole point here? Like, what are we selling emotionally, not just let's go into features and benefits and focus on profit. It's like, how do we actually connect with human beings? And that's where good copy rests. And oftentimes people think they're onto that. And we see this a lot. But, you know, we call them briefcase words or buzzwords. And it's almost like the words that get so used so often that people actually become blind to it. And just a quick reference of that is like Coca-Cola, they have a problem at the moment where, you know, they've been in so many movies for pop culture for such a long time that when they do billboards, it just kind of blends into the background. It's kind of like a tree. It's like, I've seen it so much. Mm-hmm. People just kind of start blocking the Coca-Cola ads out, and they've had to get creative and start using the bottle shape, and you bring in photography and do all of these different elements to try to make themselves relevant again. Mm-hmm. So with copy, like, what do you guys think are some of those, I guess, go-to buzzwords or briefcase words that maybe people should try to avoid or not use as often?
Empower.
Yeah.
It's definitely one.
That's a big one.
Yeah. Like, yeah, when people say they're empowered or that they want to be trustworthy or that they're loyal, like, these are things that I would say you assume that you have to be that already. So if you say, oh, I'm trustworthy, immediately someone's going to be like, you don't seem that trustworthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you
these
can't
days
say
at
it.
Least. It's back like in the day, maybe.
It's like you meet a stranger, like, trust me. Yeah. Like, hang on, dude, I just met you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You have to prove it. And in these cases, you have to prove it through the copy.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of those important things that goes back to what you're saying, the psychology of branding, is that most of these, the people that get it wrong is they focus on the benefits by using buzzwords when they're supposed to be branding themselves, not just marketing one little aspect of themselves.
Like inventing something new that hasn't really been experienced so far. Yeah. And we might be able to pull up some examples of that, but like, yeah, empowerment, integrity, like the ones I hear a lot is we're dynamic, we're innovative.
Innovative.
Trust us, we care about our customers. Mm. Like all of these kind of words, unfortunately, as good as they are, they're just used so much and they become generic because they're overused, and then consumers don't really connect with them. Like I remember we were doing our research on NFT brands and they all came out of the gate with the trust piece. And it's like, cool, we get it, like you're trying to work with people's finances, but there's other ways to evoke trust other than just saying it.
Another one for crypto brands is freedom.
Freedom.
That's becoming really,
really
overused.
Common.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like every NFT project we've talked to, that's the go-to.
Yeah.
It's like, we have to be trustworthy. We have to evoke freedom. It's about liberation and being kind of anti-corporate. And we're like, cool, but that becomes every day. Mm. So if you're fighting with 1,000 other NFT projects or, you know, other brands in the space, if you're using the same vocabulary as them, how is that any more special than what they're saying? You just sound like your competitors and you fit in.
Familiar. If you seem too familiar, you feel generic because people have seen it before. You need to find an angle on freedom that resonates with them that they haven't come across before that will like get cut through.
Right. Yeah. And that could be like photography or the way the color palette looks or... Mm. You know, you can communicate a lot of these words through design, right?
And also how you frame it. It's your take on freedom. Maybe it's not, freedom is very broad. Go a bit deeper and describe and outline and visualize what freedom means to you, to your audience, and have a take on it. It's kind of
like an opinion on what freedom means to you?
Yeah. It's kind of like saying I like flowers versus I like petunias. Very different things. One's very broad and it's like, who doesn't like flowers? And then one gives you a specific picture, a specific aroma, a specific association.
And then if you add a little bit like because blank, it's like, ooh, that's even more interesting.
Oh, yeah.
There's like a purpose or a reason behind it.
Yeah.
And then unfortunately, like some words can evoke different emotions out of different crowds. So oftentimes, you know, what brand doesn't want to have mass appeal and appeal to a large audience? But at the same time, if you use the word like, for example, masculinity, and you say that word to 100 people, they're all going to have a different visual image in their head of what it is. They're all going to have a different association with what the word means to them, whether it's positive or negative. And I think, you know, words can have that power too, where they can turn people off.
Yeah, you're describing what we like to term suitcase words,
which
are just words that have lots of layers to them or lots of associations. So when you use it, you don't really know what it's going to bring up for your audience. They could interpret it in different ways. And while that can be a pro, like a positive. can be a positive if you're doing that deliberately in certain circumstances. It can be a negative if you're out of control of what you're trying to communicate.
Yeah. Like if you're launching a gym and it's, you know, all about, you know, bro culture, it's like, high fives, you know, that word works, but in other situations, not so much.
context is important.
Yeah, context is important. So, yeah, so that's back to what you were saying, Emma, about like, who's the target audience? And I think that's a really great baseline for copywriting is like, who the heck are we talking to? And what do they expect from you, and then how do we bridge the gap between us and them? Because as a brand, like, we have our belief system, but then the market has their belief system, and they're looking at you through their belief system, their values. You know, it could be religion, it could be politics, it could be any number of things. That there's filters between them and you, and a brand can intelligently navigate that with copywriting.
That's why every time we think of a brand, the first thing we have to know is who's the target audience.
Yeah,
because that shapes everything. Yeah. So if you don't know your target audience, then it's impossible to write copy that will work for you. Because then eventually you just have to keep changing the copy to fit your target.
It's like talking to your mum versus talking to your best friend. You're going to talk to them in different ways.
Yeah, very true.
And so you have to know who you're talking to.
Yeah, you can't just text your mum, sup, Dylan, question mark. She's like, what is this language, you know? Yeah.
I'm not making soup.
What are you talking about? Mm. Well, guys, it might help if we dive into some examples and maybe unpack, you know, good and bad and the everything in between, and maybe different examples of copywriting and how, you know, we could maybe commentate or dissect what it exactly is that they're doing. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, like the difference between overt and subtle copy.
Okay. So define for me what you classify as overt copywriting and subtle copywriting. And are there layers to it? Is it just overt or subtle, or is there layers in between?
There are definitely layers. I would say overt is, like, a good example is something like gaming.
Yeah.
When they're always talking about, like, play has no limits, like PlayStation. Mm. Or if they're talking about, like, lightning fast speeds with the SSDs for
Xbox. It's very overt. It is what it is.
Yeah. And like we were saying, how they're probably the only industry that just focuses on benefits mainly.
Mm.
But that's super overt. It's just like, this is what it is. You will enjoy it.
Yeah, because you're like, what am I buying? What's the machine? What's it capable of? Like, give me the details. Give me the facts. Like, you know, people kind of want to, like, when I buy a gaming system, I don't think of that stuff because I'm not a hardcore gamer. Mm. But if you're a hardcore gamer, you're like, you know, what's the resolution of the screen? What's the frame rate? Like, what am I getting here?
Yeah. Like, even on their website, the first thing that comes up is, like, features.
Yeah.
It literally says, like, more features.
So there is a case for brands to use features and benefits. Yeah. But again, it's engineering that around the target audience.
And again, that is a sub-brand, technically.
That's a good point.
Sony, whereas Sony is a bit more subtle with their branding. It's all about, like, with their TVs, it's like, again, they... With every avenue of their products, it's all about, like, we provide a great experience, and then they go into their sub-brands, which is so much more overt.
Yeah.
Like, talking about surround sound, they have amazing surround sound, and they just continually talk about how that makes you feel.
Gotcha. So
even with consoles and the sound systems, two products, but they focus on completely different copy. One is about how it makes you feel when you're listening to it, and one is about how good it just actually is.
Right. So then, for example, in the case of Apple, would you say that their copywriting is overt or subtle or a range in between?
When it comes to their ads, it's overt. It's very overt. It's emotionally overt.
So you can have emotion and logic together, but there's a way to do it.
Yeah. But when it comes to their web copy, it's also overt, but it's just almost feature focused again.
Right.
For certain products, like their laptops, it's like impressively big, impossibly thin. That's their main thing.
Gotcha.
And their iPhone, iPhone Pro, where it just says Pro underneath.
And is that because of where the copy resides? Like, for example, if someone goes to an Apple store, they're like, give me the information. Yeah. I want to know the details. But if you're doing an ad campaign, it's just brand activation.
Yeah.
Mm. We just want your attention.
Yeah.
So I guess, like, even for a brand, they need tools to get activation, but then they need tools of education.
Mm.
So then that's where you're saying, like, you got to be sensitive to what needs to be overt and what needs to be covert or subtle.
The function and purpose of the copywriting is really important, and it's important to understand where they're at in the journey as to what they're looking at, and making sure you're giving them the information they need to line that up.
Yeah. So like a small brand that's saying, let's just say getting started, would you say that there's any difference of overt versus subtle and like the level of emotion versus logic versus maybe a brand that's more established than a giant brand?
Yeah, I would say Apple's a big example where they don't have to say much because of how established they are.
Got you. They have enough equity.
They built equity. And so now they can just say Pro and you know what they're talking about already.
They've almost created their own vocab.
Yeah.
I agree. I think when you're smaller, you can afford to be louder because you need to make a little bit more of a splash because you don't have as much reach.
Yeah.
And then the minute you're more established, you've got more risk, you've got a bigger audience. Brands tend to naturally calm down a little bit because they're already known in the market. People already have an understanding of them. Right. They don't have to be as loud.
Yeah. And is it true, like I was reading that, because Nike used to have like even more gnarly ads than they have today.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is true, but I was reading that the Just Do It tagline is actually from someone who was in the electric chair and said it before, you know, his days were over. And that was in the press at that time. And then Nike were like, let's use that as our tagline.
Mm, true story.
Right. Okay. So that's crazy. So at that time, they were trying to be maybe more provocative or more intentionally controversial to get PR or?
Yes, yeah. Because they were the small fish in the market. They, right. At the time, Adidas was dominating the market and they were the small fry and they were trying to.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Because I haven't seen the movie yet.
Edge their way through.
I haven't seen the
movie. It's good.
Okay. I haven't seen the movie yet and I've been like, man, chomping at the bit to get it. But when you've got two kids, anyway. I didn't know Adidas was conquering the market before Nike. I just had this illusion in my head that Nike kind of always had it.
No.
Right. So you're saying to get attention, maybe like Pepsi versus Coke, they were trying to pierce the market a bit more aggressively.
Mm.
And then since they've gotten somewhat of a monopoly over the market, they kind of calmed down a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still kept to their core identity, but less braggadocious or radical with it.
Yeah. Because you've got more invested, you've got more people, you've got a wider audience that you're talking to. There becomes to be a bigger business structure. Usually you've got boards of directors and shareholders you're responsible to. So it kind of naturally calms down a little bit because there's a lot of decision making.
A little bit of red tape sometimes.
Yeah.
And we've worked with these bigger clients. A few of them don't care as much, but we have noticed the bigger a company gets, the safer they seem to maneuver and the slower they seem to move.
And that's why there's always a bit of a natural opportunity for startups to kind of edge their way in the bottom because that's just sort of how it tends to pan out.
And they can pivot quicker, roll things out a bit faster. Mm. Yeah, they're a bit more pivotable. I guess back to Dennis, your point about, you know, overt versus, I'm just going to say covert because it rhymes. It's cool. It's a copywriting episode. So overt versus covert. So you're saying that, Emma, in your case, you're like when a brand gets started, you can be a lot more, would you say overt or covert or a lot more emotional?
Overt.
Yeah.
You can be stronger, more personable. Mm. It's being overt is also linked just to brand strategy and the kind of impact you want to have in the market.
Mm-hmm.
It might be that you're starting up a luxury fashion brand and you don't, like, you're going to be overt in the status, but it doesn't have to be in a loud, aggressive way in the voice.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of ways you can play out how loud your messages are versus how quiet they are.
Yeah. Mm. Okay.
Or subtle.
Do you guys have examples of like what subtle messaging and copywriting is?
Ooh, subtle. It's tough because we always work with the loud ones.
Yeah, we seem to attract that type of client.
Sorry, again.
I was just saying, I think that Samsung one is more on the subtle side. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We do have an example. Did you want to bring that up and we can talk to that?
The Samsung, the spider and the window, which Emma was talking about just before we started this.
Okay.
It's very subtle with its copy.
I saw a bit of this. I haven't seen the whole thing. He's so cute.
Honestly.
I love this.
It's ridiculous.
Ad. I'm terrified of spiders, but he's adorable.
It's the eyes. And yeah, as Emma was saying, it's the music. Oh,
it's almost like it has as many eyes as he does.
Exactly.
I didn't realize that the first time I saw a part of this.
Mm. I love the way they use the lyrics in the song.
Mm. Yeah.
To express the copy in this.
Because love hurts. And his poor little... Do spiders have one heart or many hearts?
Let's go with many. I don't know.
Yeah. Let's guess.
One heart for each eye. I don't know
anatomy on a spider.
Oh,
but you can see in terms of copy, all that's on the screen is Samsung.
And
then
love knows no boundaries, Samsung.
Yeah.
That's my favorite Samsung ad ever. That's
amazing.
Great.
It's it actually came, I love the origin story of that as well as a little detour.
Okay.
they released the new phone and it had all the different windows on the back for the different cameras, and it actually freaked people out. And they were dropping comments going, oh, it reminds us of spider eyes, we don't like it. And Samsung just picked it up, embraced it, and released this campaign. So
they used it.
They used the negative and created this amazing kind of feature campaign.
Because they would have produced all the units and then sat down and said, well, we have to sell this somehow.
They're like, freaking you out? Let's just lean harder into that.
Was it anywhere particular? Like, or was it just generally people were freaked out by it?
I'm not sure if it had a particular location, but yeah.
I do remember when phones started to have multiple cameras, it was a bit freaky. It was a bit like, what is happening?
Lots of eyeballs.
And then they were all competing off each other, like who had the most cameras on the back and the front of their phones. That became a big thing for a while. So you're saying that they, flipped something negative and made it a positive thing by creating this sweet, beautiful ad of this adorable spider falling in love.
Oh, adorable. I think it really helped with sales as well, but don't quote me on that.
So the subtlety you're saying is in the music.
Yeah, I think something people really sleep on is your voice and copy not only comes through written, but also comes through audibly. So you can like jingles and lyrics to music are really powerful tools. Like don't sleep on those tools. So you can see the way they were connecting the emotion with the lyrics in the song and then that just single powerful line at the end.
I would have loved to have been a spider on the wall when they sat down and had that meeting and said, let's just use it. Yeah. Everyone says it looks like a spider. We can work with that.
And we have a bit of a comparison one is an Apple ad that we've got where that's much more in your face. They're using narration and you can just see the different approaches. The man who hasn't brushed his
teeth since Tuesday enters the room.
Excuse me.
That wasn't me.
Said Hillary, who's only taken 347 steps today.
I cycled here.
On an e-bike. And then there's Bill, who woke up to pee twice last night.
How do they know so much about us?
Your health data says a lot about you. That's how I know Kevin was gassy yesterday. Who's next? Wait, what's that in your hand?
No, no, stop!
Well, you're no fun.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like exposing, because I was like, oh man, this is kind of personal. But then it's about, because Apple really jumped on the privacy bandwagon quite early. And we're upsetting Meta by removing all that data they were trying to collect and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And that was in the headlines of people getting quite upset about it. So Apple then again took a negative and tried to make it a positive thing. So you're saying that's a lot more overt. It's like really obvious what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost a dig at other people. Just like we're private, you're not. Yeah. Essentially.
Yeah.
So would you say like the difference between overt and like more subtle? Subtle's something that maybe makes you think, or maybe it's a bit more poetic, or it kind of leaves you to interpret it personally.
I guess it's using less of it in a more pointed way. So they sit back a lot. They the Samsung ad, and they use that final line at the end to just cinch it together.
Make sure you get it.
Yeah. Whereas in the Apple ad, it's really centered around the narration, the copy, the personality, the voiceover, and really using the words to inject the interest into that ad.
And it's nonstop. There's never a moment of silence in that.
Cool. And yeah, I like both ads, but you're saying that they're leaning into different parts of the brand.
Yeah.
Right.
Different feelings, what you're trying to evoke from your audience. Do you want them to be like, ooh, like intrigued, and it intrigues them in different ways? Do you want them to go, this is quiet, and to lean in, or to be amused and interested? It just evokes different things.
And that's the beautiful art of ad copy, and that's something that has changed a lot in recent years as well. And I think it's since the rise of the internet. Like, what do you guys think has happened to copywriting? Like, for example, those two ads, like the Samsung ad, I imagine when you click on the link from, like, the ad copy is very emotional. Then you would go to the website and it might be a bit more features, benefits, here's the cameras and what they are capable of doing. They might sprinkle a bit more of the emotion in there just for a bit of fun, but yeah, depending where the copy sits, it has a different job to do. An ad copy's job is to get attention.
Yeah.
But yeah, how do you think that attention piece has maybe shifted since the internet has come along?
I think there's so much saturation. There's, you see so many more ads, you see so many more things in your feed. Just the amount of information we're exposed to day to day with technology has gone through the roof. Almost to the point of we don't absorb at all, we're not evolved to. And so to get that cut through, you really need the copy to be clever, to stand out, to be a bit different.
A little bit abnormal.
Yeah. If it reads like something you've seen before or a little bit salesy or it triggers anything that, generic, I've come across this before, it just flies straight past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people have fear too, because they don't. There's always that conversation of we want to be innovative and different, but then oftentimes when we present people with innovative and different copy, they get uncomfortable because they might think it's too far-fetched or too out of the box. But what you're saying is that's important. You want that what's happening component, because that's when people lean in and get curious about what's this all about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to stand out. Yeah. Essentially.
Yeah.
And the boring, safe copy is what we see all the time.
Yeah.
And it's only boring because we've seen it so many times. It's like with great visuals, they can be great. But if you see it 1,000 times with 1,000 different brands, then it's boring. Doesn't matter how good it is. Mm. If you see it all the time, too bad. You just have to think of something else.
And I remember we were looking at a stat, and I'll probably get fact checked on this, but it was something along the lines of like in the 1940s, someone needed to see, what was it like, 9 ads to activate and be attracted to a brand. But nowadays, well, like back then, I think people were exposed to maybe 38 ads a day on average. Mm. Today, I think it's something crazy like a couple thousand ads, you know, through technology, through your apps, through driving to work and seeing billboards and listening to the radio, you're getting smashed with ads nonstop. So to pierce the veil of that noise, it's a lot harder than it maybe used to be in the 40s. Mm. And with the rise of the internet, when you roll something out, a lot more people are seeing it. Yeah. So you're going to have a lot more pushback, a lot more opinions.
And competition.
Competition, yeah.
Mm. You put something out, it's like, well, 1,000 people before you have tried the same tactic.
Yeah.
You just have to pay attention.
Yeah. And I guess like when you used to run ads in the paper, you could just pick a city and go that paper in that city. I'm going to talk to that city based on what they want. Whereas now the brand has to be conscious of how does the whole globe respond to this piece of copy.
You have to back yourself, just like the visuals. If you're going to take a leap with the visuals and the design of the brand, back yourself with the copy.
Yeah.
It's just like walking into a room and there's someone in the center of the room in a Hawaiian shirt being really expressive, being loud. You may not agree with them. There might be a group of fans around them really hardcore, like fanboying that person and getting on with them. But then you'll see that second ring of people that are paying attention, that are sitting back a little bit but still paying attention. And then there'll be people on the outskirts of the room that are actively disagreeing, but they're still paying attention to disagree.
Wow, okay.
As opposed to
all of us getting attention.
Yeah, just as opposed to the wallflower that's kind of saying, like leaning all the way back and not really saying much, and no one notices them.
Mm.
So even if your copy and your voice gets attention, and some of it might be like people don't always agree with you, at least it gets eyeballs, it gets responses, it's standing out.
Yeah.
You can't appeal to everybody.
Exactly. Like one of the pieces of content, remember that piece of content I put on LinkedIn about what's the difference between branding and marketing? And it went viral on LinkedIn and caused this giant argument. I had like the CMO of Uber in there and Mark Ritson and a whole bunch of people just ripping me to shreds. But then I put the same piece of content on Instagram. Everyone loved it. And it's different communities, right? So the LinkedIn community is way more academic, way more data oriented. They have degrees and, you know, all the rest of it. And then Instagram is a bit more of the Wild West. People are out there just figuring it out, right? So then, where your copy lands could completely create a different chain of reactions as well.
Yep. Yeah. Know who you're talking to. Speak to them. Back yourself.
I learned how to approach LinkedIn after that, which is great. Awesome. So is there any more examples that you guys want to roll up and speak to regarding the copywriting?
I think one that's close to my heart is in tennis.
We do know like you love tennis. It's very clear, even your shirt.
Yeah, love is an understatement.
Yeah.
I would say specifically the Australian Open, in how overt they've become with mixing their visuals and the copy.
Okay.
So before...
I do love their logo, FYI.
Yeah, their old logo was Stefan Edberg, which who would know that? It was
Idea what that is. I'm not going to lie.
It was a silhouette of him serving.
Oh, okay.
The old logo, but it didn't fit with the way they were talking, because they're always talking about it's the happy slam, it's the best slam of the year, and how they're always talking about how it's summer, all about good times, but the logo and the visuals didn't really fit.
Okay, so educate me, because I'm not a tennis guy. Mm. What is a happy slam? Just, you have to get a little elementary with me, dude. Yeah,
this is the thing where they use the
alcohol.
I'm like, what are we talking about? Yeah.
It might. They use the copy to make it sound like a Happy Slam. So they literally just called themselves the Happy Slam.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it's very overt.
Yeah. Very overt. And so what they did with the visuals is they made it a bit more simplistic, but very in terms of colors, it's just like bold colors, one color instead of the old one. I think it had four or five.
Yeah.
And it just, again, didn't really fit the way that they were presenting themselves.
Yeah.
And so with their copy now, it's just all about have a great time.
Yeah.
It's a Happy Slam. Enjoy. Okay.
Welcoming, friendly, very accessible, it's summery.
Yes. And the visuals now fit, which is what we're talking about, how you can't have one without the other.
Mm.
It was always weird, to me at least, before.
Right. And just to dive in to how much you love tennis, fun fact about Dennis, whose name rhymes with tennis, terrible joke.
Ironic.
But you were telling me how you could listen to a recording of a championship match and you knew who was playing based on the sounds you were hearing, which is serial killer levels of like specificity. But you can listen to a match and be like, 1987 between X and Y. So as a hardcore tennis fan, what do you look for from the brands? And were you happy about the changes that they made?
Yeah. I mean, I love Stefan Edberg, so bias. I was like, sucks to see him go.
So you're upset initially.
Just because I like Stefan Edberg. But in terms of colors, I'm like, yeah, this looks better, but I don't want to like it.
So it was resistance to the rebrand.
Resistance.
Yeah.
But then they were more overt with their copy as well. Like the Happy Slam was like a thing that they would say, it would be everywhere, but now it's all about the, we're having a good time here. And then again, same with copy, like you were saying, it's audible. So whenever they speak at the Australian Open, everyone has to say sort of, they have to stay on the same sort of wavelength about
a script.
Like a script. It's about, it's always about being happy. They're always trying to be positive. Whenever something negative happens, they just go, oh, let's go back to the positive.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, so the whole culture of the enterprise is really about optimism, happiness. And that obviously resonates with the fans. Is that what the fans feed off? Is that positivity?
Well, that's tough because tennis fans are very vocal about liking one person and hating the other person.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so
sounds like a boxing match.
It is.
Competition.
Yeah.
And it depends on who. Because
is it smack talking? Like, have you been at a live event where people are smack talking and catcalling?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are many examples of Novak Djokovic. He's just, people just start yelling at him.
Yeah.
And then he has to go and say, like, those guys are yelling at me.
like, I'm trying to, like, this is my profession. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so the atmosphere is, they make it vibrant. They make it like it's like a feel good thing. And then that way, whether the fans are brutal or not, at least the atmosphere is still nice.
Okay.
Even so the court color changed in 2008. Before it was like a weird muted green.
Okay.
And then they change it to a light blue so that it looks nicer on TV, but also it's very bright.
Right. So they're trying to even think about the whole visual experience. Matching that with the voice and the culture of the event.
Yeah.
How much of that do you think is them trying to be conscious of maybe that some of the negativity that happens with people yelling at players?
Yeah, I think it's in the back of their mind at least.
Okay.
Because of how bright the colors are now, how much they keep saying the Happy Slam thing, which has been around forever, but now it's much more overt.
So they bring it to the forefront and they're owning it.
More deliberate and intentional.
Yeah, intentional. Yeah. That's the thing. Their branding now looks intentional. Before it was like, it was just, you know, Stefan Edberg won it. And so they were like, let's just put him as the guy. You know? And now, especially since he's not the most prolific Australian Open player, they're like, let's just make it about the Australian Open. Make the logo AO.
Was he somewhat like of an archetype or archetypical representation of the sport, like similar to how Nike used Michael Jordan, because they're kind of similar kind of characters. Like if you look at MJ, and he's quite relentless, he's quite braggadocious and loud and robust, and then Nike kind of leveraged his brand into their brand when they brought out the Air Jordans and the rest of it. Is it similar with what happened here?
It's in a different way because they call it the gentleman sport. So he was very quiet. He was very nice. He never like yelled at people. And so like he's a good like representative for the sport.
Okay.
Pretty much like what Roger Federer became, the very calm, very nice guy.
Right.
Whereas he started like a John McEnroe where he yelled at everybody, broke his racket. So they used...
Dude, tennis is intense, bro. Yeah. I can see why I'm like leaning into it. I'm like, I want to know more. This is interesting.
I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so when they changed, they took him away from the logo and it just changed the whole feeling of it. Again, it became very intentional. It's all about like, let's actually focus on branding instead of having it be almost like it was like a soccer badge.
Okay.
It's like,
yeah.
And you know what I love? It's almost like you're gearing the copy, the voice, the whole branding around the experience so that it resonates with the experience that your audience has at the event. And I think a similar example, but totally different industry, is Manscaped.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have a heap of their products.
Yeah.
And I rarely use it, but I love it.
I was loving it. They have a shaver called the Lawnmower, yeah, which just cracks me up. And I think that you can be very clever with words and copy to really connect with things that your audience finds amusing, interesting. It speaks to them. It says, I know you. This product is made for you. Let's just like hook up, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, can we pull up that ad? This is obviously, yeah. We Save Balls is one of their pieces of copy. Also, which is brilliant.
The package is called The Perfect Package.
It does relate to tennis.
Everything's very overt and in a very funny way. So they're using a lot of wit.
We need to talk about your balls. Are they smooth?
Oh,
or covered in bits of annoying fluff? These are my balls. See how they glisten in the light?
I love
your
his
balls
voice.
Can be like these, but you got to use the right tools for the job. This? No.
Ooh.
This? Oh. No. This? Only if that's what you're into. Balls are delicate, sensitive, easy to damage. Someone's taking a chunk out of that one.
This is brilliant.
That's why I use the Lawnmower 4.0. It's got skin-safe technology with a replaceable ceramic blade, so you can trim with confidence. It's got an LED light, so you can always see what you're doing. Lights, please! And what's more, it's got a wireless charging system and it's waterproof. You can even drop it in your pint. You wouldn't want to drink it, though. It's got pubes in it.
Oh, my God.
The Manscaped Lawnmower is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. That's over 4 million balls. Every time you join them and use the right tools for the job. Because when it comes to balls, you don't want to muck about.
Oh, this is brilliant.
Go to manscaped.com and check out the all new Lawnmower.
I didn't see that ad. I saw an older one. But that is just so funny.
That was brilliant.
Yeah, it definitely, yeah, they know their target audience. Mm. And I even noticed in the men's space, men, you know, generally can get a little bit more like, we don't really talk about our beauty with our fellow brothers. But it's becoming more prominent now that we're more comfortable to talk about our routines and stuff like that. So I like how Manscaped really lean into making it kind of fun instead of being serious and being like, yeah.
It helps them break the stigma. It's that normalization of body care.
Yeah.
The kind of normalization that women have had, but it's now transferring across to dudes. Yeah. And it's great to see. I also just love the way they resonate with, I don't know if you guys, when was the last time that you mowed a lawn? But it's actually freaking hard. It's quite difficult. It's an art form.
Yeah.
Getting the edging, getting it like all level. Like you're kind of translating that analogy and metaphor across to something familiar to something uncomfortable using really clever.
Because it resonated with me. I don't mow the lawn.
Yeah.
Just FYI, I hire someone to do that. But like, I remember when I got my package. It had a newspaper in it. It didn't say We Say Balls, but it had like they made their own newspaper that kind of feels quite masculine and kind of like a big joke. But the whole experience for me was just, it was just a lot of fun.
Mm.
Like it was just a really fun way to sell a product. And I bought it because it was funny more than I bought it for the features and benefits.
Mm.
The features and benefits kind of made sense, but what really captured me was how fun it was. Because I'd seen ads before for trimmers and I never bought one. And then I saw this one and I was like, that's great.
Because how different can trimmers be? Like if you're in a market that's saturated, selling a product that is pretty available, like pretty across the board, there's a lot of them out there. How are you going to be different? Your voice, your copy, your personality, your visuals.
You have to be different, not the product.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a good point, right? So if someone's in a very competitive marketplace, and you can't differentiate on features and benefits. The other thing is it's kind of weak to differentiate on features and benefits because what happens is if your competitor comes out with a new product, all of a sudden you
does
lose
it
your
cheaper,
equity.
Yeah. Does it better?
Because there's different ways to approach it. Like, are we the cheapest? Are we the best? Are we doing features and benefits? But what you're saying that kind of sits above all of that is like what's going to get someone's attention, maybe sell them emotionally and get them invested. And if we can talk more effectively and more potently to a target market, even though we're maybe turning off other people, maybe some people would be turned off by these ads. It's important that you lean into something that's maybe not being done in your industry and do it for the first time. And that's going to be a really attractive way to bring new clients in to the e-com store.
The more people connect with your brand, the more loyalty they'll have, the more repeat visits, the more word of mouth, the more they'll tell people about it. Like, that is the kind of ad you send to your friends, that you send to your mates and go, did you see this?
Yeah.
This cracked me up.
It's kind of like when you have a really funny friend and then you talk about them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, have you met, you know, my friend Barry? And they're like, oh man, yeah, he's my so funny. So it's like almost like something to talk about too. And we noticed that, like, you know, Liquid Death is another brand that just takes it to a total extreme. It's just water. So talk about a competitive industry. It's something you can buy everywhere, anywhere, all the time. Your tap has it. Like, how interesting can water really be? And is the main thing I know about this brand, from what I've heard through the grapevine, is the guy who started it was like a skater. He has tattoos. He goes to punk concerts, and he noticed how people were drinking Monster Energy, Red Bull, and like these energy drinks at these concerts, which is not a healthy way to mosh. And he kind of was like, man, these people really need to be drinking water. So he kind of had this idea that marinated around, how do I make water cool? And a joke kind of turned into a brand that's, I guess, from what I've seen, scaled quite aggressively. And yeah, what do you guys think of Liquid Death? Because this brand is just insane, but it's captivating the market.
Sounds great. Looks great.
Yeah.
Like Liquid Death, immediately, that copy right there, just in the name, is great.
The irony.
And then better than back sweat. That's what it does. Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
Like, don't be scared. It's just water.
Yeah. Murder Your Thirst is another thing that they did.
Yeah.
And for me, I guess the tone here is maybe like, I don't know, they're really trying to go for something that's kind of like maybe audacious or a little, how would you describe
it's
it?
In your face.
In
it's
your
aggressive
face.
Almost.
Yeah.
Very aggressive.
It's edgy. It's aggressive. It's disruptive. It's niche, but in a really good way, because you don't have to love that music to go, whew, this is cool. It's got X factor.
I mean, even their copy on the website, which is like, we're just a funny beverage company who hates corporate marketing as much as you do. Perfect.
Relatable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even say, our evil mission is to make people laugh and get more of them to drink more healthy beverages more often.
And they have gotten a lot of bad PR. Like, I've seen a lot of videos where people like are really upset around the whole idea that they're using the word death, and people are, you know, I saw there's a documentary coming out, the dude that like noticed that if you speak negative thoughts to water, it changes the molecular makeup, and people are creating all these crazy arguments about, you know, Liquid Death just being awful for you. And then they kind of use that to troll the market in an interesting way. So these guys are kind of like trolls. They kind of really taken the absolute outskirt approach to the mainstream market when it comes to water. Yeah.
But you can see where it came from their audience. At a heavy metal concert, at an all-day music fest, you don't really want a water brand that's like,
like, yeah, you don't want to drink Mount Franklin from, like, you know, this beautiful pristine river that's in the Himalayas or whatever.
I don't want to sit on top of a mountain and do yoga and meditate and think about how blessed I am in this moment. Like, no.
They know their audience.
Yeah.
Which is, like we said, the first step, and they nailed it.
Yeah. And it spiraled out of there. And I think the interesting thing with Liquid Death, at least for me, was how this endorsed a lot of UGC content. So it kind of, you know, lured all those people in, like skaters and people that do extreme sports and crazy stunts and funny things, were making content with themselves, doing stuff to the cans, drinking the water. So again, it's like, not only can your brand copy, you know, speak to your target audience, but it can percolate through your target audience. Like, if you can really resonate with them through messaging and copywriting and personality, to the point where they love it so much they want to talk about it and spread the word about it and make content about it. This is something that brands, I think, need to be a lot more conscious of today, is how do we create a brand that's actually so good that people do want to spread the word about it?
People talk about it all the time. They want to go viral. They want that viral element, but you can't do that on a one-off, and you can't do that without a brand that supports that and fully backs what you're saying, what you believe in. It's in the essence of your brand, not in one-off campaigns that just pick up and run.
So you can't just jump on a trend. You have to really embody it from the core of your brand.
Yeah.
And that's what you were saying with how even the quality of the product or what they offer is less important than their messaging. So like, again, going back to Apple, iPhones are definitely not the best phone on the market, but they're the most sold. just because of the marketing.
They're fighting words.
Yeah.
But I agree with you being a hardcore ride or die Apple guy. I agree, man. Like if you look at the Google Pixel, that thing like is way cheaper than an Apple and arguably has some of the best features on it.
Yeah.
But people don't buy it for the features and benefits. They buy a phone. In my case, I buy it because of my ecosystem. I got the iMac, I got the iPad, I got the Apple Watch, I got the, you know, and I'm like, it has to work together and it has to be simple. And I don't want to look at different icons in the menu, you know, like it's,
But that's what I mean. On paper, it's not the best.
Yeah.
But depending on what you have, it works. But again, marketing, even people who aren't in the Apple ecosystem, they'll be like, oh, that marketing's pretty good. I'll get an Apple. And then you're in.
Well, think about that. How many times do we work with clients?
You've been converted to the cult.
Welcome to the cult. But how many times have we talked to clients and they're spruiking that their thing is the best?
Mm.
And how much are we educating them? Like, guys, like, that's cool.
Mm.
But every business owner thinks that their thing is the best. But what's louder than that is how you deliver it through messaging.
Mm. You need to be the most engaging.
Yeah. What's the most captivating, not the best?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Best is a sliding scale. People think premium quality. It's a sliding scale depending on budget and your needs.
Okay.
Each person has a framing of this is the best for what X dollar amount is.
What's the best for what they need in that situation?
Yeah. And so that is an unreliable indicator of where to position your brand.
Yeah, like what makes it the best?
Yeah.
And then also like, it's not about just being the best, but like what's the most relevant?
And for who?
And for who? Like who is it for? Why is it relevant to them? And why would they have any urgency to get their hands on it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Although I will disagree with just your comment before around like quality doesn't matter. I think it does. You have to have the brand experience and the quality of the product that backs up the brand promise.
Right.
So, for example, Kmart. You go in Kmart, you buy a cheap $15 stool and you get a year's use out of it. Great. Right. Brilliant. That's equivalent to the value of it. If you pay $1,500 for a phone and it breaks in 3 days, you'd go back to them. So you need to...
So the exchange, like I have an expectation based on the value I've given you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Branding is all about that promise and having the whole experience from like coming on board, engaging with the product, purchasing it, using it, repeat purchasing it. It all has to match the brand promise.
Yeah, like when it comes to, let's say, physical quality for Apple, they're on top by far. But then Samsung's interiors are better, technically.
Mm.
But their exterior isn't. And so people who care about aesthetics will go for Apple.
Right.
And people who care for stats on a piece of paper will go to Samsung.
Yeah, like every tech head I know has a Samsung.
Yeah, if that's the only thing they're interested in, that's the way they'll go.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a good thing is they do present themselves as very high quality aesthetic driven, and they are.
Mm. Yeah.
So it helps.
That's a really good point. And like, I like what Emma's saying about like the value exchange, right? If I'm parting way with a percentage of my wallet, I expect a promise on that. So like how would you define what a brand promise is and where would it usually show up in copy?
Brand promise. It is like trying to dodge
it. It's really hard to do this with Emma, by the way. Like to get you off guard, like it's tricky. Usually you're like ready for everything.
Yeah. Brand promise. I think that your brand promise is what you're saying someone's going to get out of a product.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't receive it, you're breaking that brand promise.
Yeah. Or service as well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So if I quite love getting massages, the normal kind, thank you very much. just putting that in there. So if you pay like a lot of money and you think it's going to be this beautiful spa and it's going to smell good and they're going to treat you
good.
Right,
you have an expectation.
You've got an expectation. Yeah. And if you go in and it's a back alley and it's really dodgy and maybe... because this happened to me once, maybe someone's like sitting in the room next door eating some pungent smelling food and like all you can smell is garlic and it breaks that promise.
And you don't go back.
You never go back.
Yeah.
So I think the way you convey your brand promise is through that mix of your whole identity.
Mm.
It's through the visuals. Are you promising luxury? Are you promising simplicity? If you promise me simplicity and I find it hard to find your product, buy your product, use your product.
Right.
Find all the specs, I'm unhappy.
Okay.
If you promise the best speeds in the market and then you're not, you're breaking that promise. So yep. It's just
got to back it up, whatever it is.
Yeah. Whether it's playful or fun, whether it comes through in your visuals or your copy, you just have to be aligned all the way through.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a recent disappointment I had with a brand was like something really tiny, drove me nuts. And it was a brand called an Apollo Neuro, which is like this device you strap to yourself and it like sends these pulses and frequencies throughout your nervous system.
Those health wearables.
Yeah, it's like a health wearable piece of tech. And I was like really excited about it because I read about it in this book. And I was like, I'm going to get one. I'm going to be more productive. You know, look at me go being a tech futuristic entrepreneur. And I was really excited about it. The product descriptors were great. It was invented by this neuroscientist. And the promise was like incredible. And then the box it came in was like, you know those boxes you get with like light bulbs? You can basically like rip it apart.
Mm.
It's this incredible piece of technology, which is phenomenal. And I use it all the time, by the way. Just came in this like really terrible box.
Cheap white box.
Cheap white box. And then I unpacked it and it was like in a little plastic bag. And it was just such a letdown.
Mm.
And it was almost like this brand promise was huge. I was like, wow, these guys are cutting edge. And then I get that unboxing experience. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to take a photo about it and flex on it. Mm. I'm just going to see if it works. But I was hesitant even to know if it would work. Like I was like, surefire, this is going to work when I bought it.
Mm.
Got the box and I was actually like, this looks sketchy. Like, I don't know if this is going to work. It actually worked. It's great. I use the app. It's incredible. but yeah, just you know, when you get the Apple box, like I even know, because I used to work in a phone store, when we had the new sales guys get the box, they would just rip the lid off and give it to the customer. I'm like, no. Like, give the box to the customer and watch what happens. And then it's actually timed for 8 seconds for that lid to slowly come off and then pop. Then the phone's like right there in front of you. So even Apple and how they do their unboxing experience, everything, like their brand promise lives everywhere.
Isn't it timed into like the dopamine reward right centers in your brain? That. So it's like counting down, it's like ding, the perfect amount.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they hired psychologists to figure out how do they approach the packaging in their box, which is just crazy. But it's just an example of like a brand that goes all the way with their promise.
Branding is about consistency and trust. It genuinely is a relationship.
Mm.
If you're saying one thing, doing another thing, it breaks trust. And how you can kind of keep that trust and that consistency through your copy, it's how you write it on your website. It's how your salespeople talk to your customers. It's using the right music, the right lyrics, the right slogans and catchphrases.
It's like the soul of a company almost. Because what you're saying, and we've done this here, is, you know, we're not just writing copy for ads here.
Mm.
We're trying to write like your company's language or its ethos or its way of approaching the market and then what its promise is to the market, who the market is and why we all want to hang out together. And you're saying yesterday in a conversation we had, you were saying that, you know, it's so important that if a brand promises simplicity in its product and its delivery, what's it like calling the service team or the sales team? Is that simplistic as well? Because does that ethos that you promise your customer actually live internally inside your company as well?
Mm.
Yeah.
Does it drive all decision making?
Yeah. Right. I'm not sure I understand. Scary. Apple's listening to us. Ignore that.
They heard. that's also the danger of using buzzwords. Like, we're all about simplicity, and then you call them, and it's really complicated.
So you're adding weight to yourself by using language too.
So you use like those stereotypical buzzwords and then you break that promise and immediately you're going to lose at least one person. Is it going to be like, well, I'm not coming back?
It's disingenuous.
Yeah.
Mm. So you're better off just not promising something and then like not letting someone down than promising something and then like under delivering. So it's like over promise then under deliver.
Yeah.
You want to kind of hit the note on both sides of it.
Yeah. It's going to be accurate.
Yeah. Awesome. So I guess some other examples we can land on here is some famous campaigns that have done unique stuff to language. One which I love is the Coca-Cola campaign and what they did around like share a Coke, and then they had people's names on it. So again, this copy doesn't have to be just rudimentary and descriptive or just elicit emotion. It can be gamified. It could be something that sparks a conversation. It could become a cultural contagion. It can be something that, you know, becomes personable. So I remember when I went, because my name's spelt uniquely, so no one's actually ever found my name, sad face, and a share Coke with campaign. But like, you know, my name being DAI in it just wasn't something that they had. But quite remarkable. I don't even know how they even pulled this off. Like, it must have been an insane undertaking to like do so many names all around the globe. But yeah, what's your take on the Share Coke campaign and what you guys have experienced with it?
Well, my name is also not there because my name is with one N.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So it's always two N's. So I'm like, it's not for me.
Can't just hold your thumb over it and be like,
yeah. Yeah, but it's fun like finding when that was there. It's like I found a Coke that had my brother's name on it. And I'm like, here you go. And I just hand it to him. And it's just okay. That. He's like, oh, thanks.
Here's some stats. So yeah, so Ogilvy, who we're fans of, came up with this campaign, which is incredible. They always come up with the coolest campaigns. So Cannes Lion is an award, from what I understand. Man, I wonder what the stats are from this campaign. Because they brought it back at one point, didn't they? Didn't it like go away and come back?
It was massive.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I guess from your take on this, like what kind of impact do you think it has when brands are able to do, you know, this campaign that has an incredible slogan, which is Share Coke, right? And insert your friend's name. But then they started doing like brother, mom, dad, like uncle. They did a lot of stuff as well.
Yeah, to make sure they could have one for you.
Yeah, yeah. Do you guys have other examples of when like maybe brands have gotten outside the box and just gotten a little strange with things?
Yeah, I think that that Share a Coke campaign reminds me of a little bit of the keywords that music artists use to describe their audiences.
Okay.
So for example, it makes you feel part of a community, part of the brand. You really feel like you're in something.
You're participating.
Together. You're part of a movement. Yeah. You're enjoying that fun. So some of the kind of musician examples that come to mind for me are the Swifties. Taylor Swift's hardcore fans.
I was like,
fans.
Who are the Swifties for a second there? I was like, what? Okay, Tay-Tay fans, yep.
Yeah, or the BTS army. Like giving your community, the people that are fans and followers of your brand, a
opportunity.
Name, an title, an identity. Gives them something to band behind and together and identify with. And then they'll start to rep that and it builds its own momentum. It's really cool. And then the flip side of that we were talking about the other day was Doja Cat the fact that her fans started calling themselves kittens and she outright rejected
really?
That title. Yeah. She's like, if you're calling yourself kittens, I want none of that. Yeah. So
someone asked, what do I do then? And she was like, delete your account.
Whoa, okay.
Yeah. So it's an interesting dynamic. Do you embrace it as a brand? Build momentum behind it, like the way Taylor Swift has leveraged it is pure marketing genius.
Right, so Taylor's like lent into it. So what has Taylor done with her brand to, because I know she's got a lot of press around like, you know, she does people's weddings.
She does.
She spontaneously like does really cool things to help people. Like she's really present and there for her community and her fans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think particularly Swifties. So as you said, she turns up at people's weddings. She replies on Insta, personal messages and DMs. She does surprise appearances.
Yeah.
She does a lot with meet and greet behind the scenes with people. And it's tied now into her brand language and the identity of her community. They rep it really proudly.
Yeah.
And
that causes momentum too, because if the fans are like, oh, she's reacting to us.
Yeah.
Then that creates more of a buzz.
More of the buzz, more of the hype, more of the frenzy. You're just really driving
that. And let me just be clear. When she came to Australia, we had a frenzy in the office here at Rival. Everyone had multiple screens open at all times, waiting on the countdown on her tickets to go live. And it was not everyone got tickets.
I'm still salty.
I know. if there's anything I can ever do, Em, I'm here to help you. But yeah, it was like the whole team were like, we got to get tickets. And she sold out how many events? It was crazy. She broke a record here in Australia, something nuts.
Four, I think it was four. Four. But she didn't go to Brizzy, so it was just Sydney and Victoria.
Wow.
And four, it was like 250,000 tickets. It was first reported there were like 800,000 people online vying for them. And then I think it went up even more. And so it just completely decimated.
What's that camp?
Seven.
Wait, has she toured yet or is she not yet?
No, this is for February next year.
All sold out.
And it's also sold out like within within minutes. Yeah. Yeah. Like hours even. Yeah. Some people online for like 6 hours to buy Wasn't there a stat?
I was one of those people.
There was a stat. There was like 4 million people online waiting, but there was only like 250,000 tickets or something.
It was huge.
Mm. Like there was so much
demand.
The pre-sale
had like 800,000 people waiting.
Mm. Yeah. Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And 800,000 people just sitting there waiting for a ticket. And then they probably just sold out in minutes
and
as well.
And it was gone.
One extra one on the Monday.
On a Monday?
How many did you get?
Man, Swifties go hard, dude. Swiftie fans are like, Monday it is. So like, how would you describe like her identity and like how do you think that's played into her career and how she's been able to like really bolster herself?
I think her reputation of being so involved and there for her fans, she really has dedicated herself to them and really niched into understanding them, knowing what they want and driving towards that.
Yeah.
She's created this whole little Taylor universe. It's not even little, this huge Taylor universe of all these people that have grown up with her and followed her the whole time. Mm. So I think that connection and that building of the community and giving it the title has just really reinforced that idea of know your audience, know who you're talking to, and know what they love.
Yeah. And like back to Coke, I guess like some people are ride or die Coke fans, right? Mm. Coca-Cola fans, just to be clear. And you know, so you're saying that if a brand can like kind of supersede the whole marketing thing, like we're talking to you or talking at you, but now we're participating in something together, which is kind of like what Liquid Death do with their UGC content. Everyone can participate and get involved. Ben and Jerry's do that really well. Mm. GoPro, like all their content is UGC. So everything is about bringing people from the community into the brand. Mm. So like you're saying that if you can create copywriting or a campaign or something engineered to do that participatory component, that's going to be maybe one of the most attractive ways to do some marketing.
So powerful.
Yeah.
I think if you think of all of the iconic brands that you really strongly resonate with and that you know are kind of top of their field, that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what would you say to someone that's going to say, just to play devil's advocate, that's great, they're big brands, I'm a small startup?
Every brand starts out small. Mm-hmm. Coca-Cola wasn't always Coca-Cola. Mm-hmm. Apple was not always Apple. It was Apple IT computing.
Yeah.
And it was tiny. And it was the little fish and edging its way in. So every brand starts small and grows.
Yeah. So the advice would be like, you kind of have to learn from the greats. Mm-hmm. And you know what we're talking about isn't like rocket science. It's just like maybe taking a moment to sit down and go, who is my target audience? Mm. You're saying maybe just slow down and maybe build some of the foundation before you go straight to building the house. It's almost like showing up to a plot of land and going, all right, what bricks are we using? You start just slamming things together. That's kind of jumping into design without being intentional.
Yes. Yeah. Build your strategy, be intentional with it, be thoughtful, but then also be agile.
Mm.
I think there's this perception that you reach a certain point and branding is easy, or you've got it in the bank and you don't have to put any more effort in. You have different challenges at each stage, and the brands that make it are the ones that go with the flow. They move, they pivot direction, they recognize what they're doing right or wrong, and they accommodate that and make the changes that they need to. So they don't get stuck on this is how we do things. You have to be a bit open-minded to change.
Yeah, because as culture shifts, as people use technology differently, as different generations grow up and adopt new brands, you know, brands have to maintain their relevance. So like just to talk about Nike again, they constantly try to stay relevant by using athletes.
Mm.
So a friend of mine, Matt Purcell, and I were talking about this. Shout out to Matt. That Nike has credibility. So big company that has status in the market. It's a symbol of XYZ. But how do they stay relevant? Like how do they not fall and fade into the background and have someone kind of come along and knock them out, right?
Mm.
They adopt young athletes that are on the up and coming, and Nike positions themselves with those athletes and then builds messaging around that athlete.
Mm.
That's kind of about, I think, did they do something with Usain Bolt? I think they had something with Usain Bolt. I don't know what it was, but they had like a tagline for him. They did one for Serena. So the Nike kind of partners with these athletes to
you
be
leverage
relevant.
Their personal brands.
Mm. Yeah.
Like in tennis. they had
back to tennis.
Yeah, they had Nadal and Federer at the same time.
Yeah.
Who were the two biggest at the time. And so if you leverage someone's personal brand, you connect it to your brand, then you have you can take everything from
That. And we do this internally. So like one of the exercises that we do for anyone that's trying to figure out like what is my personality, one of the games we play is like, well, if your brand were a celebrity, what celebrity would it be and why? And it always sparks a really fun conversation with our clients where they're like, is it this or is it that? Is it Ryan Reynolds? Is it, you know, is it Tom Cruise? Like what kind of vibe are we going for? And that's maybe a nice way to kind of start, because if you kind of take into account, like who is the audience? What are we all about? And then like, if you imaginary had the budget of like $2 million to hire any celebrity in the world to come and be the face of your brand and make a commercial about it, like who would you pick? And why would you pick them? Then you can kind of take like snippets of like, oh, like we like this person because they're a little sarcastic and they're a little funny and they're a little spontaneous or self-deprecating. And then you can start taking those ingredients and then maybe mixing them into your copywriting.
I think a good sample of a brand that is pivoting with their audience is Who Gives a Crap.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
So their social media content in IG I'm particularly enjoying at the moment. They've got something going on where they're uncrapping headlines.
So just unpack what this brand is and then we'll dive into the Instagram, because it's just brilliant.
So Who Gives a Crap is a toilet paper brand. They are recycled toilet paper, but they've got these fun graphically designed wrappers that are designed to be engaging. So when you're using the loo, you kind of have it as like activity paper. It's got jokes. You can recycle it for the kids as coloring in. It's a subscription base. So it's making a difference with reducing packaging and sustainability. And they also donate to give, I think it's build toilets in third world countries. So it's very feel good and make a difference, but they have gone really fun and playful with their copy, as you can tell from the name, Who Gives a Crap.
Yeah, my fiance Ellie is a giant fan of these guys, and I think it's Africa, and it's 50% of proceeds, which is quite a lot. So it's like this feel good brand that makes light of, you know, potty humor. So one thing I like as well is it doesn't come in plastic. So when you go into the supermarket, you just see that ocean of plastic.
Yeah.
And it's probably not great for the environment. And everything these guys do is recycled papers, I think. But I remember one specific thing was they launched a coffee brand.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's still on the site. And then we'll dive into the Instagram. But it was something along the lines of like coffee that makes you poo. I think was the, or it implied that.
Let's face it, selling it does.
The problem there we go. The blend solution. Two coffee bundle. Yeah. What does it say?
Is this creating the need and then like pairing it with the solution?
You sell the problem and then you sell the solution.
They're creating the whole ecosystem. Like Apple. They're using Apple strategy. The daily crap. Coffee makes.
I love this. Coffee for people with craps to give.
Oh, this is brilliant.
And every flush counts. So you can see they're being, a lot of their copy is driving that poo is not taboo. Like we are, like toilet humor is funny. It's universal. Let's just dive right on in and like face it head first.
Look at the Q&A section. So it says, maybe if you're wondering, is this some sort of joke? What does it say after that? We are very seriously selling coffee, but only for a short time. Or maybe for a longer time if people really like it.
That's good. It's that transparency as well in these brands where they're just like, we're just toilet paper.
Yeah.
That's it.
The first thing I thought of was like, you know how like there are those coffee beans in like overseas where they get animals to eat them?
And yes, the cat coffee.
What is the deal with that?
I don't know. Okay.
So people actually consume coffee that has been...
Yeah, rumor has it the cat eats the coffee. It goes through their digestion system, which processes it in some way, and they crap it out, and then cat coffee. I don't know. I think it's a Balinese thing. Yeah, cool.
Wait, what's it called?
Of course it does.
Natural coffee.
I want to know if there's a brand.
That's too organic.
Yeah. I want to know if there's a brand that's like really leaning into this.
And what's their messaging like?
Yeah, dude.
Do they know their audience?
This is it's a like wild
Who Gives
tangent.
A Crap, but it has cat jokes and cat memes as well. I don't even.
Who Gives a Cat?
How do you pronounce that? Kopi Luwak.
Does that mean in Australia we're going to have dingo and possum coffee?
Oh my God.
Partially
Lord.
Digested by the Indonesian palm civet.
There must be and something to it if people are doing
wow,
it.
Wow, okay. Well,
not a fan, but anyway, this is getting a bit weird. So back onto Who Gives a Crap. That's a weird segue, guys. I like it though. I'm not mad about it. The funniest thing was Ellie didn't tell me she bought Who Gives a Crap. So I didn't know this brand existed. And I remember getting a knock at the door one day and I opened the door and there's this giant box and it just says Hello Neighbors on it. I'm like, what is going on? And then I saw Who Gives a Crap. I'm like, is this some kind of joke? And I opened the box. It's just full of toilet paper. I'm like, oh, guarantee Ellie's bought this. I don't really know what the deal is behind it. Okay, so let's dive into their Instagram.
Well, you also hit that thing where it says Hello Neighbors, which is good copy because it's outward facing. So anyone who sees it will know that it's something. You know,
it's like marketing. It's like this giant box at your front doorstep.
Exactly. Because you know when your neighbor gets a delivery and you're kind of sticky beaking, especially if you're in like that apartment block and you're walking past, you're like, oh yeah, they got another Uber Eats. Fourth time this week.
I felt that from my neighbors. I've been ordering way too much and I get a side eye every day.
Yep.
Like, oh, he's ordering again. He can't cook anything.
It's perfect. I mean, Hello Neighbors, I'll be like, what is this? What is what? It's talking to me. What?
It's just such a funny brand. And I think they've just thought about so many things, like everything from the store being funny to the packaging having recyclability, people using it for Christmas wrapping and stuff like that.
You can reuse it for your for gifting and things like that. It just goes back to back yourself, back your concept,
be weird,
back
be
your purpose, like back it. Your uniqueness makes you you, and the more you do that, the more people feel liberated to connect with you.
Yeah, so just definitely, like you said, like leaning into it is the best way to go. Cam's just trying to log back into Instagram, so we might have to troubleshoot that. But do you want to talk to... Okay, we'll get the Instagram up here.
The one where it's let's uncrap the news.
I'm not up to date with what's going on with the Instagram, so let's uncrap that.
The way the... Because one of the titles is...
Yes,
well, one of the titles is Gen Z's disturbing new girl dinner trend has experts sounding the alarm. And then they uncrapped it to cheese as dinner finally normalized.
Wait, so what's happening here?
It's just like a trend.
So they're taking real... they're taking real headlines and real articles and rewriting them to be less the BS. So basically, because they are such an inclusive, diverse, Gen Z, youthful, playful voice and also
let's unpack it.
Unpack it. Let's uncrap it. Like, let's take the BS out of this and the bias out of this headline. So,
so they're like politicizing a headline.
Exactly.
Bare bones, like the Margot Robbie one.
Can you pull it out? I can't really read that.
It's like Living Doll Margot Robbie can do better than dressing like Barbie is the headline, and then they changed it to Margot Robbie dresses like Barbie for literal Barbie movie.
So it's like the most overt. So it's almost taking something that's covert and making it overt.
Clickbait, they're just turning, it's like, just forget the clickbait, this is what it is. Which is how they write in their copy. So they're being even consistent with their humor as well on their Instagram.
And that's important too, because like brands don't have to just write web copy. You know, like in this case, these guys have copywriting for their packaging, copywriting on the back of the actual roll paper. Like I think one of the rolls says emergency use only and it has like orange.
It's all red and it's like, it's literally like last roll, AKA order another box. You're going to run out, like warning. I love it.
Cause they always have the orange ones in the bottom of the box and it's like, they're kind of like playing a joke on the fact that you're going to run out of crap paper. So they're like, you need to order another one. And Ellie intentionally leaves them as the last rolls to remind me to order some more. So it's like, it's this great marketing campaign.
It's great. Yeah. I love how consistent they are.
Yeah. In their social media, their copy is so consistent.
A lot of clients feel like they need to be professional on certain touch points or pulled back on certain touch points and then dial it up on other touch points. And that can work for certain brands that might have B2B or maybe part of their target audience is government, and there's like very valid reasons for that.
Yeah, or there are cores in it, in mental health or something like that. Yeah,
but for the majority of brands, it's about that consistency of experience. If you get a really fun, playful social media feed and then you land on their website and it's kind of like boring as batshit, that's not consistent. You're like, am I on the right page?
It's kind of like breaking their promise a little bit too.
Yeah.
It's that consistency. If it doesn't feel consistent, it's weird.
Yeah,
I don't like these guys anymore.
And I think social media, like the common, like, I guess, myth with social media is like, I have a social media page, I'm a company, I got a license to sell, and let's go out and push product. But the best brands like Tom and Jerry's, GoPro, who gives a crap, they're just on there having a good time. Because, yeah, social media is more of an awareness piece, less of a conversion piece. Your website should do the converting. And I think, you know, when brands are trying to really sit on social media, it's so difficult to be clever and creative, and this was where it requires a bit of effort. And this is why companies are hiring internal social teams, because they're like, we need specialists to come in and figure this stuff out. So it's, yeah.
Also, in terms of brands and how they stick in your head, like I assume you meant Ben and Jerry's, but you said Tom and Jerry's.
Oh my Lord. Okay.
That's what I mean, is how good is Tom and Jerry's stayed this long?
I was sending you Tom and Jerry. No, I was sending you a Tom and Jerry meme earlier today. I don't know what. Ben and Jerry's, just to clear that up. My bad. Thank you for being an epic copywriter and curating my vocab.
This is why Dennis does our editing.
Yeah. So the guy behind the scenes on all my content is always Dennis curating it and saying, that's wrong, fix that. Fix that immediately. But yeah, I think we've covered all the crap of who gives a crap, and I think that they're absolutely stunning and killing it. And I do believe we had one more or two more references that we wanted to pull up just regarding copy. Yeah. One of them was an accounting company that's kind of taken things to a different level, called Naked Accounting. And
great copy.
Okay, we're pulling up the website. It's brace yourself. Do you know what's not sexy? Bookkeeping, tax, BAS statements, tax strategy, tax planning, finance assistance. The list goes on, and there's just...
It's written on a naked dude.
It's written on a naked dude, on a video, on a blurry butt. Here's the thing. I think when it comes to accounting, in my mind, accounting is quite like, oh, it's this thing I have to do, and it's tedious, and I'm doing it right now. Like, and it's just driving me nuts. I'm like, I'm going to get all these lists together and get all my receipts and fucking... Like it's
mundane.
It's just mundane. But what this brand has done, they've kind of taken the edge off, you know, accounting. It just feels fun and playful, despite it being completely countercultural to what you would expect an accounting agency to be. But yeah, what's your take on this? Because I know we've talked about this in the office a few times, how these guys are really taking things to another level. But yeah, I know we're talking about a lot of gnarly brands today, like, you know, toilet paper brands and people being naked during the accounting and, you know.
It's cheeky. This one stands out so much. Literally. When you think of a classic traditional accounting firm, you think blue, you think trusted, you think safe, you think copy corporate, that just sort of blends in.
And stock photos of people happy.
You don't think shocking. And this website, like, we strip back your business to the bare nuts and bolts paired with that graphic just makes me go, oh my, like
makes it blush a little bit.
You can't look away and you cannot get this out of your head. And I think it brings, like you said, that element of fun. You know, your experience with these guys is going to be different.
Yes.
That it's not going to be.
That's a good point. You know, the promise is a little different, right? You're like, if I get on the phone with these dudes, it's going to be a fun conversation.
Yeah.
Right.
Even the fact they've got the photos of their team and they're in t-shirts and they've got the colors they've picked really contrasting to their industry colors. Yeah. That yellow is disruptive and really bold and really slaps you in the face. It's veering away from everything that signals we are the same as everybody else.
Yeah.
It's loud. It's very loud.
Yeah, and it's just fun, and you know, one could debate or justify that, this wouldn't work. But if you look at how many teams they have, how many accounting teams, you know, they have, how many they have, like 12 staff on there?
Something like that.
Most accountants I know have like 2 or 3 people.
Hey, 12.
Yeah, 12 employees, and it looks like they all work together. So like, this is quite an established accounting firm. From my experience, every accountant I've ever worked with is like 1 or 2 people. So... you know, out of the gate, these guys are obviously doing something right. They're leaning into it. Back to your point, it's just leaning into something.
It's leaning in. I love that. We look under the covers. We want to see it all. So they, like, you don't, I think what people can be afraid of is breaking trust, turning people off. I don't read this and go, oh, they're unprofessional.
Right.
There might be a small percentage of people that do that. But I think that they're connecting with their audience that wants a different experience, that has had bad experiences with accountants, that maybe a more youthful, up-and-coming audience that wants to engage a little bit more with the people they're doing services with.
Yeah, so you're saying people maybe misunderstand like what trust means. They're like, trust has to be blue. Trust has to be corporate. Trust has to be suit and tie. Maybe they're once upon a time. Like, I can't imagine this this company doing well in the maybe the 40s. Mm. But in the day and age that we live in and the technology and the way we use it, this brand's really relevant to how people maybe feel about accounting.
Big splash.
And they copy at the main page. They talk about like naked accounting, bare all down, and then they just go into straight just this is what it is.
Right.
Book in a session. It's just they hook you in first, is what you were saying earlier.
Yeah.
They focus on the hook and then they give you the features.
Right.
In the same paragraph.
Because they got to get your attention.
Because they're still being really transparent. Exactly. This idea of naked is representative of transparency, bearing all, putting it on the table.
Yes.
They're just framing it in a really fun way.
That's a really good point. Because the buzzword you were saying about like the word transparency is something that people are like, we want to be transparent and trustworthy. They're doing that, but in a very different way with copy.
You can't say we're transparent. You just got to be transparent.
No.
And then people will know that you're transparent.
I mean, you say I'm transparent, people go,
what are you hiding?
You're dodgy.
Yeah.
Whereas if you say I'm naked, they're like, what, really?
Yeah, this is really clever.
Love their strategy. And their copy is really good.
I wonder what they do with, what are they doing with Instagram content? Curious if they like keep this theme going.
Because I think something you do have to remember with copy, with written word, it's really, really powerful. And when it's written on a page and the audience is reading it, you have to understand that they are putting a tone on it. Like they're bringing something to how they interpret that. So when you're writing it down, you tend to dial it back just slightly from what you might do audibly. So when there's more context in a video and a bit of personality and someone's saying something, you can go really far with copy because you've got more context as to how to understand.
You've got more stimulation to support the copy.
You've got facial expressions and things that pair with it that you go, oh cool, they're joking. Whereas when you write it on a page, it's very blunt and there's nothing to soften it, and so you tend to lighten it up just slightly.
There's room for misinterpretation, which is why you have to be very intentional with your copy as opposed to when you're speaking or your visuals.
And I guess this is why branding gets so complicated for people, is because look how much we've unpacked copywriting and how many things it impacts in a brand. It's almost like you could look at it like the lifeblood of a human body. Like there's all these different components of your organization, and the copy kind of feeds through the culture. It feeds through the team, the scripts, the slogans, the taglines, the descriptors, the, you know, the marketing, the advertising. Copy kind of lives everywhere inside your brand. And like, what would you guys say to anyone that's starting this journey and they're looking at it and going, oh my gosh, like that's a lot of things I have to think about. Like, how would you help people start that journey? How would they start that process to start unpacking, you know, rather than trying to do the full Monty, like naked accounting? Like, what would you say that is a starting point for someone?
Ask an expert.
Hire us. We got your back. Rival.
For me, it would be identify your target audience would be the first thing.
First place to start.
First place.
Yeah.
What about for you?
Yeah, target audience. Start with some descriptors. So imagine your brand is a person. How do you want them to talk? How do you want them to sound? Write down some descriptive words and then try to create a voice that aligns with those descriptive words. I would also just say, don't sweat it so much. The words, like the words on the page and the words are one of the easiest things to change about your brand. Logo, colors, visuals, you kind of get a little bit locked in to a style and they're harder to change. Words and copy on websites, socials, it's a little more temporary. People move past it faster. So if you make some mistakes, don't sweat it. Change it, try something new, keep going. Just keep going.
Right, so it's one of the most maneuverable, flexible parts of a brand is the copy.
And you'll dial in, you'll find what works, you'll keep tuning it, you'll get that. Just start somewhere.
And for those that are looking at it and going, I don't know who my target audience is, and I'm launching a company and I'm yet to find out. That's where maybe it's great to just play with copy and experiment a little bit and try different things.
Talk to who you want to attract. You may not have the marketing data. You may be a startup. You may be guessing to say, I've gearing this product or service around what I think is a gap in the market, but I'm not 100% sure. Talk to the people you want to attract and you'll appeal to them. And then again, go with the flow. If those people come in, work with it, keep pushing it. If it's different to what you expect, pivot with it. Keep going. Just keep going.
Because we kind of did that with Rival, like early days. Mm. We kind of were just guessing. We're like, we don't know like what kind of copy is going to work on the website. Mm. But then we noticed that our website had an average view time of 18 minutes or something ridiculous like that. And we're like, man, people spend ages on the website. And then we, you know, the copy that you and the team created was like sarcastic. It was funny. It was making fun of things. It was quite rebellious and lighthearted and cheeky and charismatic. We're like, this is working. And then we even noticed that the types of people getting on calls with us were a lot more emotional. They're a lot more creative. They like that kind of flair that we had. So we started to be magnetic toward the type of people that we like to work with.
Yep.
So you're saying like, if you can't figure out who your target audience is, well, ask yourself what kind of people you want to work with.
Yep. Imagine your most ideal customer. Imagine what they like. Build up that profile and talk to that person.
Start somewhere, as you're saying.
Awesome. Well, I think this has been an epic episode today. And if you've enjoyed it, let us know. And if you have ideas for the future, please let us know. And yeah, a lot of potty humor today. So is what it is. Guys, thank you so much for joining me today. Appreciate
potty
you both.
Or potty.
Oh, is it potty or potty? What are you?
Oh, it's potty. Oh, well, that was a bad joke.
Is that a podcast joke? And on that note, we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye for now.